Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. For Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory with great warranties, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Terrific service department that backs it all up every step of the way, routine to difficult, with great pros and technicians all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Brian Barnhart in a moment, but first our play-by-play call of the day.
Dalvin Cook, the lone setback. At the four-yard line, second down and goal. Zach Wilson drops back. Lob left for Garrett Wilson. One-handed catch. Oh, he's got it. That's a jet touchdown. Garrett Wilson with an unbelievable self-tip. The one-handed snag. And the Jets are a point after away from a tie. Low snap. And getting away, a line drive kick is Sam Martin. Gibson runs under it at the Jet 35. Starts to his left, gets to the 40, turns the corner at the 45-50. Blockers in front at the 40, at the Bills 30, inside the 20. Stutter steps to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown! And it's a Jet touchdown! This game is over!
Bob Wischusen with the call on the Jets radio network last night as the Jets did beat the Bills 22-16 in overtime. And joining us now is the outstanding play-by-play voice of Illinois football and basketball, my good friend Brian Barnhart. Brian, how are you?
Mr. Jones, I'm glad to be on with you. What a call by Bob there. He's, wow.
Yeah, I hope they didn't have to give him a paper bag after that. That was kind of like, hey, come on.
He may need some lozenges after that one. Wow.
He threw everything he had into it.
Yes.
So we will start with this, Brian. You've seen it up close and personal. What has been the difference between first half Illinois and second half Illinois in each game?
Well, I think part of it is a slow start. Against Toledo, it's interesting because the first drive of the year, Steve, they drove down the field against Toledo. It was about as clockwork a drive as you'll ever see. I mean, it was perfection. And they jumped up 7-0, and you thought, whoa, here we go. And then they just stopped, and they just Toledo took over the game in that first game and dominated in the second and third quarters, and it took a pick six by Illinois and their new defensive, one of their safeties, Miles Scott, to get them kind of back in the game a little bit. And then they took the lead. Then they almost gave it back. And the overall problem in both games was that the defense just is not at the level that it's been the last year and a half under Brett Bielema. Of course, Ryan Walters is now the coach at Purdue. He was the defensive coordinator. And four guys in the secondary last year are now in the NFL, three of them drafted. And one was taken, of course, Devin Witherspoon in the top five. So, you know, trying to replace those guys, has been difficult in the early going. And there's some things you could do defensively, as you know, when you've got that kind of talent that you maybe can't do with guys that are still up and comers in that position. I think they can get there eventually. And I'm pretty confident in Brett Bielema and his staff to dig down and figure it out. Because we had a game a couple of years ago, Steve, the first year that Brett was here, Virginia blew us out in Charlottesville, just ran over us. And they made some big adjustments from that week to the next and went on the string of defensive excellence that we've seen over the last year and a half. So I think they'll get it figured out, but the defense has been a problem from the start in both games. Granted, they faced the preseason player of the year in Jalen Daniels, who, if you've not seen him play, he is dynamite. I mean, he is unbelievably good. And then the kid at Toledo is, they scored 71 last week, Finn, and he's really good too, and a dual-threat quarterback. So, we've seen two really good ones. We're going to see another good one on Saturday. But it's been a combination, really, offense and defense. Slow starts in the first half, letting the other team get ahead, having to dig themselves out.
Yeah, because I did talk last week about the fact that Daniels was going to be back in the game. I mean, he just gave everybody fits with the way he played the game. Have you been surprised, though, at the ability of teams to – I know it's part of it's the quarterback, but teams have run the ball apparently better against Illinois than you expected. Would that be fair?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the question in our community in Champaign-Urbana and Illinois has been, okay, what happened to our defense? Where did it go? Because we only gave up 6 rushing touchdowns all of last year, and already given up a handful already this year, and the other teams being able to run the ball. The defensive coordinator, Aaron Henry, he didn't even take a question yesterday. He just started with an opening statement saying, yeah, it's on me. We've got to figure it out. We're not gap sound. We're not tackling well enough. We're getting pushed around. And they've got to figure out. They got to do something different because giving up 31 points a game isn't gonna get it done in any league, and even in a Big Ten league where some of the teams in the West don't score a lot. I'm thinking Iowa and some others in Minnesota. But you got to score more than they're scoring, and you can't give up 31 a game. And it's been just a combination of things. Now Johnny Newton had a really good game the other night against Kansas. He had Daniels cornered on a couple of different occasions, and in one play right at the end of the half, which was a backbreaker, Daniels scrambled away and threw a 48-yard pass to set him up for a touchdown at the end of the first half. So, and there was another time where Johnny had him trapped in the end zone and he got away, and he completed a first down pass on third and long. So Johnny's Newton's playing really well. Randolph had a lot of tackles, but there's just way too many tackles right now in the secondary. I think 3 of our top 4 tacklers are guys in the secondary, and it would just, it's a combination of things, really, and they've got to get it figured out.
And Randolph got banged up in the fourth quarter of that game, right?
Yeah, I believe he did, yeah, a little bit. And Julian Pearl on the offensive line, that's been the other thing, Steve, is we ran the ball so well last year, and
yes,
you knew you couldn't replace Chase Brown completely because he ran for 1,600 yards and 2,600 over the last 2 years. But, you've got Reggie Love, who's a good back, was a good backup back. He's got to step up. McCray was hurt almost all of last year. And the other two guys are either redshirt freshmen or just true freshmen. But the offensive line has struggled. They've got a new center, Josh Kreutz, who comes from the great Kreutz family with the Bears. He's going to be fine. But he's new, playing now, and we've had our 2 previous centers go to the NFL. So there's some changes there. The right side of the line has struggled probably more than the left, which is probably stronger with Isaiah Adams and Julian Pearl on that side. But, they've got it up front, as you know, is where you win games. And right now they're not winning up front. Toledo pushed them around too, and that was a problem, and they can't afford to do that. And then they're facing a really good Penn State team, of course, this weekend.
All right. Something that's also happened, too, is that Illinois has become, because out of necessity, almost like a portal destination at quarterback. And last year it was DeVito. This year it's Altmyer. What have you seen the pluses out of Luke Altmyer so far through 2 games?
Well, I would say 2 things. One is his arm is stronger. He throws a really good deep ball. I think by the end of last year, teams had, especially in the Michigan State game and the Purdue game late in the year, and of course Michigan, but when it was close, but teams said, hey, we know you don't have a deep threat. You're not going to throw it deep, so we're going to take away your short passing game. We're going to put 8 in the box. We're going to stop Chase Brown, figure it out, and it was tough to score. And so I think what Altmyer brings is, he throws a really pretty ball. It comes out of his hand really nice. He's got a strong arm. And the other thing is DeVito was somewhat mobile and would run when he could, but Altmyer has already scored a 72-yard touchdown the other day against Kansas.
Yeah.
And he's not afraid to run, and he's really effective with it. And he gets down when he needs to. He doesn't, let himself open to a big hit. And he's just a smart, calm, pretty quiet guy, but has shown his teammates a lot of toughness. They really respect him. DeVito was a little more animated, a little bit more like Brandon Peters, I think, before him.
Sure.
But Luke's impressed his team with his demeanor, and he even in the fourth quarter drive against Toledo, where we were down, to come back and win the game, he winked at Brett Bielema on the way in and said, "I've got it. I've got this." And that shows a lot of confidence, and I think the guys have responded to that.
Yeah. Isaiah Williams, I mean, geez, I go back to the COVID game back in 2020, empty stadium. He was a handful when he played quarterback, and then they did the smart thing and they moved him out to wide receiver. In this offense, is he really the go-to big play guy that Illinois is always aching to have?
Yeah, they need him to be big. He had 99 yards last week.
He sure did.
And I was
impressed.
Yeah, he's very fast. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but he's fast. They try to get it to him with jet sweeps. You know, they try to get it in his hands. With slant passes, they want to use him even more. In fact, Barry Lunney, the offensive coordinator, says we got to get it to him more. We need to make sure we get it to him. I think the guy that's emerged a little bit as a little deeper threat is Pat Bryant.
Yeah,
number 13. You'll see him. He's a big receiver, 6'3", and I know the scouts like him. And he can go up and get a ball, and then between him and Casey Washington, I'm sure you remember him, had a great catch against Toledo to save us at the end of the game, diving catch about 30-some yards, and he's a really good hands guy. So, and the tight ends, they've been throwing to the tight ends more here this year, too, which is you would expect from a Brett Bielema offense. So, but Williams is, he's the motor's engine. He's the one that makes it go and stirs the drink. I mean, he's fast. He runs great routes. He's really learned that wide receiver position. The only difficulty he has is like we had a 50-50 ball he battled for the other night against Kansas, and the ball was taken away from him just by a bigger secondary guy. But other than that, he's got everything you want.
All right, let me ask you about the atmosphere in the stadium. What has the Bielema era done to juice up the fan base? And I know it's going to be an orange out on Saturday. I also know there are tickets available too. So, what is the atmosphere like? Because I know what it's like to walk into Assembly Hall, State Farm Arena, whatever the sponsor of the month happens to be, and then go to Memorial Stadium, because people in Illinois love their football. But, obviously, Brian, you would know firsthand it's been a fight. So what's the atmosphere like now?
Well, it's funny. They sold 10,000 more season tickets than they had last year. So that's a step up in and definitely in the right direction. I know when you're Penn State or you're Ohio State and you're Michigan and you're drawing 100-some thousand, every game, that's probably just a drop in the bucket. But for Illinois, that's a big deal. And to get that many tickets coming into this year after going to a New Year's Day Bowl last year. So I think there was some – this was about excited as the community's been about football in quite a while, ever since maybe near the end of the Zook era, right after the Rose Bowl team and in 07 and that range. They won a couple of bowl games back-to-back in 10 and 11, but – hadn't been that kind of energy in the community since then. So I think the atmosphere will be fantastic. I mean, it the one thing that hurts a little bit is an 11 o'clock start as opposed to a night game. I think our fans really love the night games, and to get the student body there, as you know, at 11 o'clock in the morning is a bit of a trick. But, I think the other thing that maybe tamped down the enthusiasm a little bit maybe this week, and I think it'll still be there, but was the loss to Kansas and the way they lost, being down so far. Now, they came back and made it fairly close within, about 10 points or so. But, that was a little disappointing and a little concerned about the defense. And we've had too many years of, having a really good year, and then the next year has been disappointing. And, some people that jump on and off bandwagons, they go, well, here we go again. We raised our hopes up, and now we're not going to be that good. And I'm like, well, I think we're still going to be really good. I have confidence in what Brett Bielema does. But he's been great about selling tickets and getting out there in the public, and he's on radio all the time, you know, promoting tickets and does a great job at our radio shows and mingling with the public. So there's been a lot of excitement. And this is for football, and I think you experienced this a little bit, maybe in reverse too with football and basketball, but you know, if basketball doesn't win 20 games, people are really upset. You know, they really get upset with the basketball team. And with football, it's like they're pretty easy to please with football. If you just win 7, 8, 9 games and be competitive, be like Iowa, be consistent. You know, be like Minnesota, just win consistently. You'll win the fans. They'll show up in big numbers. You just got to prove that you can do it. And that's the thing that Brett Bielema has talked about, is bringing consistent success here, because we just haven't had it. And I think he's got a plan for it. And but, you know, again, they've got to figure out the defense, you know, as they get ready for Penn State. But the schedule the rest of the way, I think these are three of the tougher games they were going to play. Toledo, the defending MAC champions, and the favorites at Kansas. And then with you guys coming in, Penn State. After that, there's no Michigan. There's no Ohio State. You've got Wisconsin at home. You know, you're at Minnesota. You're at Iowa. Nebraska's here on a Friday night. I mean, those are all winnable games at Purdue. So the schedule kind of breaks out in their favor after this. If they could just get through this early sequence, they could still have a really good season.
Pennsylvania has great high school football. So I'll leave you, everybody, on this. Illinois has terrific high school football, too. What kind of job has Brett and the staff done of making sure they solidify relationships within that state as pipelines on talent?
Oh, they've done a fantastic job. I think that was the the day Brett was hired, it was the day we were playing out in Happy Valley, the COVID year, when Lovie Smith had been fired and Rod Smith ran the team out there in Happy Valley, and then Brett Bielema got hired. There in, I guess, December of 2020. And
Brett was at the game at Penn State.
At the game,
Yeah,
he was at the game. And that morning he got hired by Josh Whitman, the very first call he made was to the head of the Illinois Coaches Association to say, hey, we're going to visit every school in the state, all the rural communities and downstate, Chicago and the suburbs. We're gonna call everybody. We're going to go see them, whether you have a player or not. And now, at this time, going into this season of the 120 people that are on the roster, counting walk-ons and everybody else,
half of the team
is from the state of Illinois, which is a remarkable turnaround. Because, I mean, I think it was in the low teens at one time under Lovie Smith. And that was the one thing that people that I heard, because I emceed high school coaches inductions, Hall of Fame coaches every year, and I would hear the same complaint that, you know, Lovie Smith needed to interact more with us, you know, and recruit the state. And I would hear it from the coaches. So I knew the relationship wasn't good. And then Brett Bielema has completely turned that around. So they've even hired a longtime high school coach in the state to be his director of high school football relationships.
Yep.
And so they've got one of their own respected coaches, Pat Ryan, is a guy who won, you know, some state titles and is respected in the high school community. He's their liaison, and they just did some things to really connect with the high school. And so now they're getting kids out of the suburbs that in recent years went to Iowa or went to Minnesota or went to Wisconsin, and keeping those kids in home. So I think 59 guys are from the state of Illinois, which is a vast improvement.
Brian, always a pleasure. I know you and I are going to talk here in just a few minutes about a few other things, but I look forward, really, my friend, to seeing you on Saturday. It should be terrific.
Well, it will be, and we're looking forward to seeing you guys, too. It'd be good to have Penn State in town, and I know our fans will be ready, and Penn State's a big draw, and I've got more requests for tickets for this game than I have in a while. So I think hey, you got Penn State tickets? Yeah, I'll work on that. So.
Well, I wouldn't have put that out there to the Penn State fan base, Brian. I mean, now they're going to call you.
Yeah. Well, they can text me, so that's fine.
Once again, Brian's number is... No, I'm just kidding. Brian, appreciate it, my friend.
All right, very good. Thank you, sir.
The great Brian Barnhart, play-by-play voice, Illinois football, basketball. It was. You know what's so refreshing about those conversations?
They're not as fired up as me.
No, the level of positivity. Back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Want to work for a stable yet growing company? Got it. Want to work for a family-owned business with over 100 years' experience in taking care of customers and employees? Got it. Want to work for a leader in selling more cars and satisfying more customers? Got it. Who has all that? SMC Sunbury Motor Company is looking for technicians across all their departments. Whether you're an entry-level technician, an experienced technician, or someone looking for a career change, Sunbury Motors would love to hear from you. They're looking for technicians for their quick lane, car and light truck service, heavy truck service, body shop, and frame and alignment division. You can apply online at sunburymotors.com, in person at our North 4th Street location, or call Todd at 570-286-7746. Your new career of working on Fords, Kias, Hyundais, Western Star trucks, plus anything that fits in the door, and some things that don't. Join Sunbury Motors. Your new career is waiting for you.
Not only coming out of the game, it turned out he's out for the season. Neil Coulong in the next half hour, we will ask at this about Neil. Again, for Jets fans, it's obviously such an incredible blow. They had thrown everything they had into having him, and he's not there anymore.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 Humble Dwarf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way. Routine, difficult, great technicians, great pros. At Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 at 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Tuesdays, me, the best half hour of the week. Tuesdays. With Neil. Sir, welcome.
It absolutely is the best half an hour of the week. And it's the first post-week NFL half an hour. As always, it's great to be here.
Well, let's start with, obviously, the big news of the week. The Aaron Rodgers injury, 4 plays in to his tenure with the New York Jets. Just what ran through your mind as you watched it all play out last night? Because when he went down and I saw the replay, the first thing I thought was that might be an Achilles.
You want me to be honest? My initial reaction is my night just got a lot longer, and it certainly did. I thought the exact same thing. I'm not a doctor, and I didn't diagnose or anything like that, but that wasn't an extreme hit. It's not like he was rolled over. You didn't get a sense that it was broken, and his reaction was that of the veteran that knows exactly what it is, you know. And he was there. He stood up for a second. I remember it distinctly. He shook his head. Then it was as if they told him to get down because they'll come and look at him. And we didn't see him again. So it was, I felt very telling. If you've watched a lot of football games, you get kind of a sense of what certain injuries or general concept injuries will look like. Like, this is going to be something to do with the knee. This is the hamstring. With that, it kind of just seemed like Achilles. From what I've heard of it, it's typically not going to be as painful as like a broken ankle will be, but you're not going to be able to move either. And not much you can do with that. And it really kind of seemed like Rodgers knew. He kind of flipped the ball at the defender too. It was almost like at first I was like, he was that competitive sort of you know, antagonist that's in him. I kind of felt like he's upset that he just got sacked. He threw the ball, but you watch him replay knowing that he was hurt. It's like he knew it right when he went down. You know, I've been racking my brain on this since last night. I don't think there is a comparison in sports to that. You know, the level of hype, everything that came with it, and the brevity of his time there. I didn't feel it was the right time to do it, but I was, you know, kind of messing around on Pro Football Reference, adding up the players in Jets history who now mirror Aaron Rodgers' stats, among the likes of Keyshawn Johnson, Wayne Corbett, players who are 0-for-1 with a 39.6 passer rating, but none of them got sacked. So it's it really just kind of mind-blowing how quickly it all can end. And that's what happened, unfortunately, to a team that, you know, good things don't happen to very often. They've got an uphill climb, and they are, in many cases, after a wild ride, exactly where they finished last year. They're in the same spot they were in. It's a good defensive team, and they certainly played like that last night. To some degree, you really hope that they're able to kind of overcome that, but it's hard to envision that working out over another 16 games.
So now let's bring this now to a league issue, because with Rodgers in play, the league puts together its TV schedule for the year. I believe the Jets were within one of the league maximum of nationally televised games that you are allowed. So what does this do from a league perspective? Because now the drawing card is not there.
As far as we know, there won't. I mean, it, you know, logically, there's nothing that's going to overcome the loss of Aaron Rodgers. And the story going into all of those games will be, what would this have been like with Aaron Rodgers? That's unfortunate in a way, because you can't really, you know, obviously you can't predict this. It's hard to say that this is a terrible game to watch now that Rodgers isn't a part of it, because to be honest with you, one of the most entertaining football games of the week, and probably will remain that way for the rest of the season, was what we watched last night between the Jets and the Bills. Was it great football? No, probably not, but it was dramatic. It was entertaining. There were lots of ups and downs for both teams, probably more on the mistake end of things than you would typically say for like a great game, but it was entertaining. And I think the Jets bring a lot of that. There's still a lot of star power in that team. The defense is fun to watch if you're into defensive football. There's a lot to watch with
sure
that.
Sure is, yep.
I'm not sure how much of that you can really get past if you don't have the quarterback, and I am sure they will be flexed out of every opportunity that they have to have that done to them. But it's competitive football. That's really what you hope for more than anything. They have a lot of explosive potential on defense, and we saw that last night. And, you know, Buffalo didn't play particularly well, to put it mildly. And the Jets did the best that they can do. You really hope Zach Wilson can kind of turn it around. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but they can be a real tough team to play if he's playing even, you know, replacement-level football where he is now.
So now let's turn to the movie The Fugitive, where Harrison Ford is on the bus and the train is coming at them. So let's get to the Steelers-49ers game. You just feel like you can't turn away. Okay. T.J. Watt aside, it was terrific.
Yeah,
now there's
funny.
No Hayward. Now there's no Johnson. What do you think of this team?
I thought, you know, you could make the same movie parallel to, like, Groundhog Day. Because to be honest with you, our conversation for the last 3 years now, after week one, it's exactly the same. We see the value of T.J. Watt, who had yet another brilliant week one performance, and this team's offense is so convoluted and the operation is so sketchy, you don't know where it's going to go now. This is just the year. The real difference is this is the year we shouldn't have this same conversation, but here we are. You know, it's amazing to me. On the third play of a game, and yes, it is week one, there are things to iron out, but veteran tight end Pat Freiermuth on the strong side, the left side of the offensive formation, on the third snap of the game, clearly did not know the snap count,
yep,
didn't seem to understand his assignment, and circled around twice while four 49ers players hit the running back in the backfield that all basically came in untouched. What happened? You know, why? I understand that there are things that happen, but it's the third play of the game. You guys have had 2 weeks. You should have 10, 15 plays scripted that you can run well. And if you don't believe me, watch San Francisco's first 15 plays. Tell me if they made a mistake in any of them.
Right, sure.
Pittsburgh consistently is like this. Now, I understand the stat of Matt Canada. His offenses haven't gone over 400 yards in his entire tenure as offensive coordinator. I hear the fans complaining about where the ball is going in their passing game as if that's the only thing that matters. The problem with the Steelers' offense is they have not exploited the continuity that they have. They've had two training camps now with Kenny Pickett. He is without question their guy. They knew that going in. Kenny Pickett has started now 13 games, and three of them off the top of my head were so poor, they quickly come to mind when I bring up worst starts that he's made. And Sunday was one of them.
Yeah.
So his last start is one of his worst. It's not a good sign. Your receivers are still operating in their own space. They're not working in concert with anybody else. That's a schematic issue. I think their offense would have been vastly improved if Pickett threw the ball accurately. He struggled mightily with that, almost to a cringeworthy level in the NFL. You can't miss as badly as he did, as often as he did. But at least the defense couldn't stop water from running uphill either. Now, this is the point where we should fairly point out San Francisco is a really good team. If you want to watch offensive operation, look at the way they executed. It was crisp, clean. They knew exactly what they were doing. And contrary to a common opinion in Pittsburgh, they're not doing anything complicated. It isn't overly creative. They just do everything the right way all the time. That's hard to stop. Pittsburgh has a knack right now of being an offense that's best skill is keeping both teams in the game. When they're down, when the pressure is against them, or they're in a 2-minute drill, 4-minute drill, they seem to be much more successful in an effort to kind of come back into the game. But they're not going to ever be able to pull away from an opponent either. They have to have the things on, you know, kind of the same level. And it's, you know, I'm not, you know, call for somebody's job. I'm not getting into that. But there comes a point where I really can't help but wonder what exactly is going on inside these meetings. What are they practicing? Because they're not crisp. They're not sharp. They don't seem to be working in concert with one another. So what's the plan? What are you trying to get them to do that they can't do? I've often said this wasn't a team blessed with an overabundance of talent on the offensive side of the ball the last couple of years, but they're not being put into a position to succeed either. And however they want to answer that or address to it, the natives are restless. I know that. they're playing a defense that, in my opinion, after watching them play, the Browns are on the same level as the 49ers are defensively. They're really, really good. This is going to be a challenge and not going to look real good in Pittsburgh if they start off after all the hype that they had from the draft into training camp, into the preseason. They're starting off 0-2 with two games in which they scored 7 points or less. That very well might happen, just all things considered from what I've seen. And now there's a huge improvement from week 1 to week 2. I don't want to put that in stone yet, but Cleveland is at midseason defensively. They look really good. So it's trouble in Pittsburgh. This is a real important week.
Well, part of the job is seeing what your personnel is capable of and then fitting your concepts around their capabilities. So what are some of the capabilities that maybe some of these players do have that doesn't seem like it's being fit into?
Well, the passing accuracy of Kenny Pickett has never been a real hindrance. And I'm not trying to pick on Pickett as if that's everything, but, you know, to defend Matt Canada from a results perspective, you really can't do a whole lot when your quarterback can't hit the broadside of a barn, okay? There's not much you can do when he can't put the ball on the money ever. People are getting after Deontay Johnson for slipping, or at least using that as an excuse for that interception. He didn't slip until he had to come back across his body and attempt to go over the defender to get the ball. That's when he slipped. That pass was nowhere close to where Deontay Johnson was. Contrary to that, it was exactly where the defensive back was. Considering where it was, that was not a back shoulder throw. You don't miss inside on a back shoulder throw. You put that on the sideline if that's what you're doing. And they weren't close to the sideline. You know, it was a really bad throw, and it was a bad decision. I'm not even sure where he should have been going with that ball. I hate to do this, but at the same time, it's impossible to see the flaws of Pickett and then look at Brock Purdy on the other side, who operated brilliantly, did exactly what he was supposed to do, didn't miss, threw a couple great passes, didn't make mistakes. That's why they won. You know, you find me a game in which one quarterback noticeably outplays the other and loses. I mean, it just doesn't happen in the NFL. Pittsburgh, at its base level, against a team as good as San Francisco is, they're not going to win with a performance like they had from their quarterback. I don't want to say that that was everything, but you do have to evaluate the dozen or so other plays that they ran in that game under the mindset that their quarterback couldn't throw anything, and he had to throw a lot. They were down a lot early. They barely ever ran the ball. You know, Najee Harris had one run and a bunch of nothing else. Jaylen Warren barely saw the field. They didn't have a chance to run or possess the ball because they couldn't complete passes. They couldn't move the sticks. I don't want to say that because it's exactly what we've said over the last 2 years. That's the problem. It's like at some point here, something needs to shift. That's three different quarterbacks starting in week one over 3 years, and none of the three of them have looked like they're remotely prepared to go out on the field and play the team that they're playing against. And granted, all three of those games are against very good teams. They managed to win two of the three somehow. Luck finally ran out, and they lost this year. But it's their quarterback play has to improve a lot. And I understand what Mike Tomlin is saying when he says this is on all of us. It was everybody. I don't disagree with that. But the most noticeable change they're going to make, and what's going to benefit everybody else, is a quarterback who is delivering accurate passes consistently. And they did not get that on Sunday.
They have Cleveland coming up on Monday night, so America gets to see this mess for themselves. Cleveland obviously has a terrific defense. Doesn't take much to say that. So from the Steelers' point of view, how important is it going to be to keep the score down to give their offense a chance?
It's the age-old question, you know, what comes first? The offense dominating or the defense, does one set up the other? The way Pittsburgh is, and we have, you know, two seasons and a game of history of this now, that they're not going to score a whole lot of points. They're not going to move the ball very far. That's just the reality that we're in. Because of that, it naturally, you know, the assumption is the defense is going to have to hold a team to 20 points or less to have a chance. And I think that's where they are. Cleveland, though, is one of the teams they've moved the ball on a little bit. I think, and don't quote me on this, I know that there was one game they had 399 yards. So since we're not counting that, you know, in close only matters in horseshoes and hand grenades, I think that was against Cleveland. That's a team they've had success with. They've been able to move the ball a bit. They have, you know, because of that, they might have a little bit of added confidence going into the game. But like I said, watch Cleveland play. Jim Schwartz has come to that team and completely overhauled what they're doing and how they're doing it. And they look tough. It's not going to be the same Browns that we've seen the last couple of years. They're tough against the run, and they can get after the quarterback. So it's in many ways, real difficult to think the offense is going to have a whole lot of success, if any at all, because this is a team that, if we go down the chain of logic with them, they don't succeed enough on first down. That puts them behind the eight ball on second down. They lose both of those, third and long. Jim Schwartz lives for third and long, and this is the perfect team for his defense. They're going to tee off on him, on everybody that Pittsburgh is going to put out there. So I think in that regard, their offense, their defense is going to have to stand on its head for four quarters, maybe longer than that, if they have any chance at all. And you got to get a really, you have to figure out a way to get a really bad game out of Cleveland's offense, which we've seen is certainly possible. But it's been a talented team the last couple of years. We've known that they have the ability. If this is them putting it together, or if it's just a fluke, 1 week, we'll find out Monday.
Always the best half hour of the week, my friend. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coolarm. Didn't Jim Schwartz work for you guys?
Bingo!
It's kind of weird hearing how he's overhauled them. I mean, he's not a terrible defensive coordinator, but I think we're putting a little too much stock in what he's doing over there in Cleveland. I mean, look what he had to work with. They can only go butt up. Just throwing it out there. But they look good. They shut down Joe Burrow and the Bengals last week, so.
Okay. What was the question I asked him about the offense? Let's see if you were paying attention.
Can they
do the concepts match the personnel? Right? What is the key part of that? What the personnel is capable of doing. Okay? I know people want to throw things on coaches all the time. And do coaches make mistakes? Of course they make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. But your job is to go out, okay, and say, okay, mask any problem you have and take advantage of every matchup you have. And then there's going to be some smart aleck on Monday. So what a terrible job he did, coach, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? The key to the whole thing, as always, is execution. You could have the greatest scheme going, and if people make mistakes on the field and don't execute it, you're really looking around going, okay, I'd call the same thing again. They just have to execute it better. But you can't put any blame on the players, it seems, these days, because they have all the power, right? And then it's like, well, he can't coach. Oh, brutal. You want to know why it's working better for Jim Schwartz in Cleveland? They're executing it better. You'd be shocked. I know you love your guys. But some of your guys are decent football players, all right? And some of them are great athletes playing football, but some of the guys you do have are not, quote, football players. I know you don't want to hear that because it's like, oh, it can't be. We've got, no, no. It's like, okay, you know, you've got some terrific football players, some terrific athletes who are football players, but you also have a couple of athletes on that defense that are not football players. And they can mess up an entire scheme for anybody. And then you tell everybody Jim Schwartz is lousy at what he does. Okay, terrific. Yeah. You hate when I do that to you.
He's a better coordinator than head coach. I've always said that about him.
Some guys are that. Some guys literally are better coordinators than head coaches. You just give them a side of the ball instead of the overall CEO part of it. Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. Just some guys are. Okay. I can name a whole bunch of guys over the years that when they get an opportunity to be a head coach, then boom. And then as soon as they went back to being a coordinator, it's like, hey, look what they're doing now. I'll tell you right now, North Turner was one of those guys. He was a better coordinator than he was a head coach.
I also agree with that, absolutely.
Yeah, I bet Roger agrees with that based on the tenure with Washington. Let's see. Last I looked, Nick Pivetta had 9 strikeouts in 4 innings. Right now, he has 10 strikeouts in 5 innings. And he's only thrown 76 pitches.
Same old with the New York Yankees this 2023 season.
That's quite a performance so far. I mean, he won't go past 7, but still, not bad. Not a great pitcher, but he's been good for them.